Wait, just one moment. Wait, we have people exiting the courtroom. You may proceed.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, I'm Dorothy Isaacs, and I represent Anita McFadden, the appellant in this case. There are several issues before the Court, but the primary issues are to what extent, when a defendant in a medical malpractice case seeks to act as his own expert, should his designation be provided to the plaintiff? And in this case, we basically had no designation other than that Dr. Kiernan would testify regarding his care and treatment of Ms. McFadden. At trial, much to my chagrin and surprise, Dr. Kiernan was called and went into an extensive discussion, virtually taking apart my expert's opinion regarding the efficacy of comparing a CAT scan that was taken of Ms. McFadden in March and a CT scan in conjunction with a PET scan that was taken in May.
Well, it shouldn't have been a surprise that he was called. If anything, a surprise would be limited to what he testified about.
Correct.
All right, why don't you go right to that?
Well, that was the issue. They had two expert thoracic surgeons, as did I. All four thoracic surgeons testified regarding comparing the two scans. And in fact, there was no dispute from any expert prior to Dr. Kiernan that you could not look at the two scans and ascertain whether or not the mass in Ms. McFadden's chest had indeed increased in size or decreased in size. Our expert said it had actually decreased in size. Dr. Kiernan's expert said that the mass was the same or had not increased in size. Dr. Kiernan took the stand and unequivocally testified that you could not compare the two scans, that since they were not taken at the same institution, and that one had to do with a PET scan and one had to do with just a CT scan, that they were not able to be compared in a manner that would advise the client whether or not she should undergo this risky biopsy.
That's not what I took his, I thought the objective to testimony to say. I thought his complaint was how Dr. Cooper measured the two. You know, taking his ruler and putting it to one and taking his ruler and putting it to the other. He himself, even when you called him as an adverse witness, said, yeah, I looked at both of them to see whether or not the mass had grown. But it's like looking at apples and looking at oranges and deciding, you know, I looked at an apple, I looked at an orange, and seeing what they told me, I could tell whether or not the thing grew or it did not grow.
Well, that was the issue, but I did not, when I called him in my case in chief, and the defendant is claiming that we opened the door for Dr. Kiernan's extensive testimony. All I elicited from him was whether or not he had actually compared the two, because our expert's opinion was that the standard of care required that before you go in and operate on someone's mediastinum area, which is a very small area, a compact area in the chest. It includes your heart, your aorta, your esophagus, your trachea, your lungs. It's packed in between the two lungs. This mass that was in Ms. McFadden was a part of this table. That was undisputed. He was trying to go in there and take a piece of tissue, or really it was an enlarged lymph node. But it was not like we would think of something where you could actually pinch something. It was.
Well, Ms. Isaacs, that doesn't. You've gotten a little bit away from Justice Kennedy's question, I think, because the real question here is, by calling the defendant as a witness in your own case and then asking him expert questions about the comparison of these scans, why have you not opened up this entire thing for him to be able to respond when later he takes a stand in his own behalf?
Well, with all due respect, I did not ask him expert opinions. I asked him.
Well, if he's not an expert, how can he possibly testify to the propriety of comparing the two scans, or the need for comparing the two scans? Could you ask a layman off the street that question?
I think quite honestly, Your Honor, I think almost any of you and anybody in this room would know that one of the things that doctors routinely do is compare scans to ascertain whether or not a tumor is growing or shrinking. That's how they determine whether or not, you know, the chemotherapy or whatever they're giving the client.
You could ask a doctor that because he is an expert on the subject, but you probably would not be able to ask me that. I know nothing about these scans. Why in the world doesn't that open up this field for him to be questioned in his own case when he testifies as a designated expert then?
Well, I think what it is, Your Honor, it was not that I opened it that he would become an expert to go into the detail that he did when he was not qualified to do that or not designated to do that. In our case in chief, all I asked him was whether or not he did it. And he said, yes, he did. And I left it at that.
Whether he measured them? That was your question.
I'm sorry.
Whether he measured the two slides?
I don't think I asked him if he measured. I asked him if he compared.
Well, how would you compare if you didn't measure?
Well,
because the whole issue is that the one slide, one scan, is much larger than the other. So a comparison, by definition, would be a measurement, wouldn't it?
Yes, and his doctor, his expert doctor, Dr. Friedberg, who coincidentally is at the same institution as my expert, University of Pennsylvania, testified that he had, in fact, measured the mass.
But let me stop you there, because it seems like to me measuring and comparing things are not the same. I mean, and you kind of conceded that they are. Because I could have two maps, one that's as big as this room, and one that's the size of this, and I could compare the two to try to figure out where something is, but I don't measure the two to figure out where something is. So I can compare them without measuring them.
I guess you can compare and look at it and see, you know, whether it looks as if it's growing or shrinking, which is what I think their expert, Dr. Miller, did. But both Dr. Friedberg and Dr. Cooper actually measured, and Dr. Friedberg went to the extent to say that Dr. Cooper did not just do one measurement. He did sort of an X across, because obviously a tumor or a mass is not, you know, a totally circular or perfectly round or whatever. So you're looking at it to ascertain the parameters of it and whether or not there have been changes in it. But what really caused the problem in my case was the extent to which he looked at the scans on the stand, which was available to their experts, but they did not do that. And, you know, compared the, you know, the parts of the body and things of that sort. And we had no way to rebut that because we had not been told that he was going to testify regarding the, you know, the comparison of the scans. So we were not permitted to bring back our expert to explain to the jury that what he was saying is absolutely not so.
Let me do something here and see if you can tell me if I'm right about this. I understand your argument to be that you don't contest that under 801-399B that a treating physician may testify and doesn't have to be designated so long as they contain their testimony within the statute itself.
Correct.
Right, and that statute itself says that this treating physician may testify about diagnosis, signs and symptoms, observations, evaluations, histories, treatment plan, obtained or formulated as contemporaneously documented during the course of the practitioner's treatment. You don't have any problem with that at all, do you? That's what the statute says.
No, we accepted it.
So your quarrel is that when he got on the stand in his case in chief, that he went far beyond that and then became the kind of expert that we control under Rule 401B4.
Correct.
Right.
I do want to reserve at least 3 minutes in rebuttal. It looks like I have 5 minutes and 14.
All right.
They actually qualified him as an expert as the third, that was the other issue we had, as the third thoracic surgical expert, not just as the treating physician, which under Virginia law, they're entirely different expectations. We had several.
But they could do that as long as they restricted the questions to those that are allowed under 8.01.399, right?
Yes, and Your Honor, there was nothing in the record that indicated that Dr. Kiernan had compared the two scans or even considered whether or not the mass had changed in any way between May and March and May, because I guess it was his opinion that you don't do that.
But that's not, I don't see how you can say that when I thought on direct he told you that he had done exactly that. You asked him that when you called him as an adverse witness that you compared it to, and he says, yeah, I did. I looked at both of them.
He did, but it was not in his notes. There was nothing in his notes. He sat right there in front of Ms. McFadden, and this is in the record, and dictated a letter to the pulmonologist who had referred Ms. McFadden to him. Not once did he mention in that letter that he had compared these scans and he was concerned that it was or was not growing. There was absolutely no indication that he had done that. Our position, our expert position was that his action in going in and biopsying this mass was beneath the standard of care because it was clear as you can have it without taking a tissue sample, that she did not have cancer, that she had histoplasmosis, and they went into a lot of detail as to the splenic calcifications that she had, all the hallmarks of this benign, old,
let's assume for the sake of argument, you're running down of time, let's assume for the sake of argument that you are absolutely correct, that what he began to talk about was not contemporaneously documented in the record. Why isn't this harmless error given the testimony of the other doctors that is the same?
It was not, that's the issue, Your Honor, it was not the same. They did not compare the scans and point out to the jury in the detail to which Dr. Kiernan did as to why my Dr. Cooper was wrong in his testimony.
But he came to the same conclusion that his two experts did, which was that there was no evidence of growth in looking at these two scans.
Absolutely not. Dr. Kiernan's position was that you could not compare them at all. His two experts said they were the same. They had not grown any. And one of the issues, of course, with cancer is that when you have cancer, unfortunately, it grows and it can create the problems. But Dr. Kiernan's testimony went even beyond his own two experts.
You wanted to reserve some time.
Yes,
you have a minute 48 left.
Thank you, Justice Sotomayor.
May it please the Court, my name is Jonathan Schraub, and I represent the FLEs here today. Your Honor, the issue here can be whether or not the rule on disclosure covers a treating doctor who testifies as an expert and under what conditions he can testify as an expert. That issue was raised by the appeal. What is interesting is whether or not the court really needs to reach that issue. It might be helpful to those of us who practice in the field to have that clarified. The fact of the matter is that in this particular case, as it is presented to the court doesn't need to even reach the issue, and I think it's fair to state that at the outset, because the basic problem here is that the plaintiff, the appellant, waived the entire issue by what is colloquially called opening the door. It's really a waiver issue. But by opening the door.
Opening the door to what?
I'm sorry?
To what?
Opening the door to testimony regarding comparison of the two studies.
And what is that testimony called? Is that testimony under 399, or is that testimony under Rule 4:1B? What is that testimony?
It's testimony under 399. It's testimony under 399. That's where the whole confusion is.
You see, she doesn't contest that. The truth of the matter is we're not going to let lawyers confer the law of the Commonwealth on the courts. That's for sure. But she doesn't contest that point, so both of you agree.
Absolutely. That's why I say there's a confusion about this. Dr. Kiernan performed the comparison. He stated on the record in the trial that as part of the treatment of the case, not as a retained expert for purposes of developing an opinion for trial, but as part of his underlying treatment of the patient.
But her complaint is that 399 says, obtained or formulated as contemporaneously documented during the course of the practitioner's treatment. She doesn't have any quarrel with the idea that he might have done it.
Yes.
It's just not documented.
Yes, and we disagree with that. It is, with respect to my colleague, an incorrect statement of the record. Exhibit 45, which unfortunately is not in the appendix, but it is in the record and it's referenced in our brief. It's referenced in our brief. Exhibit 45 below, which is the letter that Dr. Kiernan wrote to Dr. Wigton, the treating pulmonologist, during the course of the treatment, is completely about Dr. Kiernan's comparison of the two studies. That's what he is discussing, that he has the two studies in his possession, that he looked at the two studies, and here's the differences that he finds in these two studies. What happens then at trial is that the first witness who's called by the plaintiff is Dr. Kiernan. And the first question that he's asked is, did you compare the two studies? And if you compared the two studies, then did you see any changes between those two scans? Well, I submit, once you ask those two questions, you have opened the door.
But you see, that's counterproductive to your argument. Because your argument is that if that is contained within 399B, then there's nothing to open the door to. You're allowed to examine on it anyway.
Well, I agree, but because of the confusion that has been raised here.
But the concept of opening the door is you can't get to this unless they open the door. But 8.01399B says that if it's obtained or formulated and contemporaneously documented, and it involves diagnosis, signs, symptoms, observations, evaluations, its history, at the time, it's admissible. Why do you need to have a door open when a statute opens it for you?
Well, Your Honor, I guess I don't disagree. What we're trying to do here, I suppose, is cover all of the possible bases that the appellant has raised in this case. So we believe that this testimony was permissible in this case for any one of three or four independently correct reasons. All right? One of them is that it was, in fact, sufficiently documented to be part of the record, and therefore he was testifying as an expert because a thoracic surgeon is, by its nature, his nature, an expert. But he was testifying as to matters that occurred and as a result of his participation in the event at issue. His elaboration of that at trial does not constitute a new opinion. His discussion of examples and illustrations of that, which is really what my colleague's concern is, that he addressed examples and illustrations that were raised. Not new opinions, but examples and illustrations that relate to the opinion.
Now, isn't that exactly the dividing point in this case? See, until you got right to there, it was entirely within 8.01399B. But when he gets on the stand and starts pulling out all these slides and testifying at that point in time, he has gone beyond 8.01399B, and he is in the realm of an expert opinion testimony that needs to be disclosed under Rule 4:1B.
I respectfully don't agree, Your Honor, because we know from Gottfried versus Pettis, that the law is that you are not simply required as the treating doctor to parrot back what is the terms or the statement that is contained in the record. You are allowed to explain what your thought process was. You're allowed to explain and elaborate on what it was that went into and that caused you to determine and decide what your treatment plan was. So if he looked at those studies, and if he compared them, and if he determined that, in fact, you can't compare these two effectively, right? And if there are three or four slides which demonstrate that, he can point those three or four slides out, because that explains what the opinion was. That explains how he reached the decision that he reached, what the basis is for the reasoning. That's well within Godfrey. The fact that he did that doesn't take it out of the realm and change it into a new opinion. There is a fundamental critical distinction here between two different opinions and an opinion with a series of illustrations that support that opinion. That doesn't change the nature of the opinion into a new opinion. These were all illustrations of the same basic opinion that was first elicited in the plaintiff's case and then re-elicited in the defense case. I might throw in as an aside another basis that arises for independently determining this case. There was never a timely objection made. There are three or four issues here that determine this case, I believe, before you step into the question really of whether how the disclosure was or wasn't made. This evidence came in three separate times before the plaintiff decided to object on the grounds of the disclosure. It came in once in the plaintiff's case, to the degree she wanted it to come in, right? It came in once when
let me stop you for a second, just because I think we're going a little bit off the rails, as I understand it rails to be, in that we've got to pinpoint what we believe the plaintiff is objecting to. And my understanding is that the plaintiff does not have an objection to Dr. Kernan talking about the comparison between the two slides.
Yes.
Because they, of course, asked him to do so when they had him as an adverse witness.
Yes.
I thought where this thing, where you all have a dispute, is when you call Dr. Kernan and he's not testifying concerning his treatment to the client. He's not testifying about his treatment to Ms. McFadden, but you're asking, well, what do you think about what Dr. Cooper said? Oh, well, at that point in time, he's not testifying as a treating physician. He's testifying as an expert criticizing another expert and their technique in deciding and which supports their testimony. And I thought that's what the objection was. It wasn't that he was comparing the slides. It's that he's not saying, I didn't look at these slides. Let's put up here what Dr. Cooper looked at. Not what I looked at when I was treating her, but what he looked at when he gave his testimony to you. And let me critique what he did and show you why he was wrong.
Right, but the issue goes, Your Honor, to the same opinion. These are illustrations of the opinion.
But why do you get to illustrate that? Why don't you just testify what you did? Why do you get to critique what somebody else has done if you've not been identified as an expert who's going to do that?
Because Dr. Cooper's testimony went to what Dr. Kiernan did when he was treating her.
No, Dr. Cooper's testimony that he was testifying about was how Dr. Cooper measures whether or not a tumor has grown.
Right, and Dr. Kiernan's response was, the reason I came to the conclusion, because I asked him that question precisely in the record. I asked him that question precisely in the record to make sure that it was clear.
You asked him what question?
Find it, Your Honor. I asked Dr. Kiernan, on the record at page 581, I asked Dr. Kiernan, when you looked at the CT scan.
No, that's completely legitimate. That's not a problem with that question at all.
But
I think the questions that you're going to have problems with are the ones that are before that.
But this is what tied the question before that back into his treatment. I was well aware, and everybody was well aware, that Dr. Kiernan was testifying as to how he reached his conclusion as a result of the treatment, that the comparison of the scans is not a good thing to do. It is not a valid thing to do. You cannot reach the conclusion, and he didn't reach
the
conclusion.
Well, why would his conclusion just be, I don't do that because it's not a valid way to do it? And you say, well, doctor, well, what do you do? And then he testifies as to what he did. What gives, if you've not designated him as an expert in the standard of care in measuring CT scans, how is he allowed to testify concerning what another expert did in measuring CT scans?
Not
what he did himself, but what they did.
All he said is that these are the problems that I have with doing it that way, which is all part of his thought process in reaching the conclusion he reached.
But he didn't do it that way. The problem is he didn't do it that way.
And he explains why he didn't do it, Your Honor. That's the point. He explains why he didn't do it that way. Why can't he elaborate on why he didn't do what Dr. Cooper says you should do? It's not a theoretical question to Dr. Kiernan. Asking Dr. Kiernan, theoretically, would you do this? You're asking Dr. Kiernan, why didn't you when you treated this patient? Not for purposes of trial, but back then when you treated this patient, why didn't you do that in reaching your opinion? I didn't do that because X. That's different than, it is the same opinion. The opinion doesn't change. That's the issue that Rule 4 covers. Have you developed an opinion for trial? His opinion was developed when he treated the patient. That's there from the outset. I think it's well covered under Pettis that you can do this. You can elaborate on your original opinion, which is all Dr. Kiernan did after the basic question was asked. Once a door is opened, if we're going to go that route, Your Honor. Once the door is open, the other side does not get to determine how wide it stays open or how wide it is or isn't open. You don't get to change the playing field by saying the door is open and have a new opinion. But I suggest there's nothing in the record that suggests that.
Well, that's a significant distinction because if your theory is that the door is open, I think you're right. They don't get to limit how far it's open.
Right.
But if this isn't one of those situations and your confines about how wide this is actually the statute, that's a different question. Now, why don't you address in the time remaining, even if you are, we disagree with you, why isn't this harmless error?
It is harmless error, and that is yet another in the list of reasons why I think this case goes out before some of the potentially thornier issues, if the court finds them thornier, even get addressed here. There were essentially multiple witnesses who said the same thing, who came to the same conclusion. They may have come to the conclusion via different routes. They may have used different examples. And I come back to the statement, it is a fundamental distinction that you draw between what the opinion is and the examples, which are an infinite variety, that you can use to support it. This was no surprise to the plaintiff. The plaintiff could have deposed, based upon the letter to Dr. Wigton and the knowledge that this comparison was made by Dr. Kiernan, she could have deposed Dr. Kiernan till the cows come home. On what did you do? How did you compare? What were all your opinions? What were the basis? Did you look at this? Did you look at this? Did you look at this? She chose not to do it. You then cannot come in and say, I'm surprised at all the reasons that he has for feeling the way he feels. But when multiple experts come in and reach the same conclusion, Dr. Kiernan's testimony was merely cumulative of that.
All right, your time has expired.
Thank you, Your Honors, very much.
Wait just a moment. Don't get the clock started yet. he went over rather significantly. I'm going to give you another 30 seconds as well. So at this point, you have 2 minutes and 30 seconds.
Thank you.
Put 2 minutes and 30 seconds on the clock.
Your Honor, I would certainly dispute that the Dr. Wigton letter went into any explanation about the comparison of the two scans, and this was a joint appendix. They chose not to put that in.
Can I ask you a question?
Surely.
I thought that your objection is not that Dr. Kernan testified that he compared the scans. I thought what you were objecting to is Dr. Kernan's critique of Dr. Cooper.
Correct.
Okay.
Because that was clearly for litigation, in which case it has to be designated and you have to give the subject matter, the opinion that you're going to give, and the basis for that opinion. If you're going to do that, that is a clear indication of what differentiates a treating doctor from an expert. The fact that he was, responding to what our experts said, using his slides that he compared, and those slides, all part of the scans that had been, at trial, that the jury could look at, and so forth. But he took, I think it was four slides, and was able to show the jury with the calculations how he compared it. His two experts did not attack Dr. Cooper on that issue. They just merely said that volumetrics are better to do it, but they didn't say it couldn't be done or that it was erroneous.
So they still reached a different conclusion than he reached. They reached a different conclusion than Dr. Cooper reached, because each one of the defendant's experts said they thought the tumor had stayed about the same size.
Right, and in fact, that is significant in and of itself. If the man, and it, Your Honor, it wasn't a tumor.
But I guess the question I have is, even if this testimony was improperly allowed, how is it harm?
It is harm because I think it was Justice Mims' recent case of Harmon versus Honeywell says, there is a presumption that if the court errs in allowing testimony or evidence that is not admissible, the presumption is that it has been harmful. Dr. Kiernan went well beyond his own two experts in attacking my expert's opinion.
Your time is now expired. Thank you very much for your argument.
Thank you, Your Honor.
The court will take a short recess.
All rise.